Rebel Spurs by Andre Norton. Chapter 1. Even the coming of an autumn dusk could not subdue the color of this land. Shadows here were not gray or black, they were violet and purple. The crumbling adobe walls were laced by strings of crimson peppers, vivid in the torch and lantern light. It had been this way for days, red and yellow, violet, colors he had hardly been aware existed back in the cool green silver gray brown of Kentucky. So this was Tubacca. The rider shifted his weight in the saddle and gazed about him with watchful interest. Back in 59, this had been a flourishing town, well on its way to prominence in the southwest. The mines in the hills behind producing wealth, the fact that it was a watering place on two cross-country routes, the one from Tucson down into Sonora of old Mexico, the other into California, had all fed its growth. Then the war, the withdrawal of the army, the invasion of Sibley's Confederate forces, which had reached this far in the persons of Howard's Arizona Rangers, and most of all the raiding, vicious, deadly, and continual, by Apaches and outlaws, had blasted Tubacca. Now, in the fall of 1866, it was a third of what it had been, with a ragged fringe of dilapidated adobes crumbling back into the soil. Only this heart core was still alive in the dusk. Smell, a myriad of smells, some to tickle a flat stomach, others to wrinkle the nose. Under the rider the big stud moved, tossed his head, drawing the young man's attention from the town back to his own immediate concerns. The animal he rode, the two he led, were, at first glance, far more noticeable than the dusty rider himself. His saddle was cinched about the barrel of a big gray colt, one that could not have been more than 5 years old, but showed enough power and breeding to attract attention in any horse-conscious community. Here was a thoroughbred of the same blood, which had pounded racetracks in Virginia and in Kentucky to best all comers. Even now, after weeks on the trail, with a day's burden of alkali dust grimed into his coat, the stud was a beautiful thing, and his match was the mare, on the lead rope, plainly a lady of family, perhaps the same line, since her coat was also silver. She crowded closer, nickered plaintively. She was answered by an anxious bray from the fourth member of the party. The mule bearing the trail pack was in ludicrous contrast to his own aristocratic companions. His long head, with one entirely limp and flopping ear, was grotesquely ugly, his carcass beneath the pack a bone rack, all sharp angles and dusty hide. Looks, however, as his master could have proven, were deceiving. So, the rider's voice was husky from swallowing trail grit, but it was tuned to the soothing croon of a practiced horse trainer. So, lady, just a little farther now, girl. From the one-story building on the rider's right, a man emerged. He paused to light a long Mexican cigarillo, and as he held the match to let the sulfur burn away, his eyes fell upon the stallion. A casual interest tightened into open appreciation as he stepped from under the porch overhang into the street. "That is some horse, sir." His voice was that of an educated gentleman. The lantern at the end of the porch picked out the fine ruffled linen of his shirt, a vest with a painted design of fighting cocks, and the wink of gold buttons. The rather extravagant color of his clothing matched well with the town. "I think so." The answer was short and yet not discourteous. Again the mare voiced her complaint, and the rider turned to the gentleman. "There's a livery stable here, sir?" Unconsciously, he reverted, in turn, to the rather formal speech pattern of another place and time. The man in the painted vest had transferred his attention from the stallion to the mare. "Yes, quickest way is down this alley."